you're travelling to another dimension. A dimension not only of sight and sound, but of mind. A journey into a wondrous land whose boundaries are that of imagination. There's a signpost up ahead. Your next stop, the Twilight Zone.
Hello there. Welcome to another episode of the Twilight Grown podcast. I am one of your hosts, Rish Outfield.
And I am Cathexis.
Well, that's an unusual name, Cathexis. Where did that come from?
I can't explain it right now because I am on drugs.
She is on drugs, folks, and which is the best way to enjoy today's episode. This is the first episode of the new Twilight Zone. That's what they called it in the 80s when it aired. The revival show, sometimes people call it. But, you know, it's hard to say because they're all called The Twilight Zone. Mm-hmm. But this was the follow-up series on CBS in, I think it went from 85 to 87, later on syndication. But the episode we're going to be talking about today is the remake of The After Hours, which aired October 1986 mm-hmm. from the second season. And we had done the original After Hours, which I thought was an excellent episode.
Oh, me too.
And I knew there was a remake. I had talked about it in that episode, but I hadn't seen it. And so we tracked it down and we managed to get a... was it passable? Was it acceptable?
Perhaps.
You know, one of those shady copies of that episode. And we watched it. So what we usually do... Oh, and I forgot to mention that Cathexis is on drugs. Today. And so half of the episode that she describes to you never actually happened, but was a hallucination. So tell us what you remember the extensive episode we just saw.
From my crystal clear memory, I think that I saw a young woman enter a mall. She was looking for a Cabbage Patch Kid wrapped in a corn husk at a toy store. They were closed, but she went up anyways, of course, because that's what one does. And she walks into the toy store, and there's a woman that looks like... She looked like Elvira?
Oh, okay, like Elvira, yeah. Mistress of the Dark.
Yes. Strange woman, of course. And, well, Marcia is her name.
It's funny you would forget that.
I did. So Marcia's looking for a... What did they call it? Corn husk doll? I'm just going to call it that. And it's, for some reason, very, very important to her that she gets that. She's very frantic about getting it. So she goes in. It's after hours. And, of course, you know, they're still open because why not? She goes through the toy store, asks the woman if they have any of this corn husk doll. And she says, yes, I think we have one in the back. And then a strange little boy showed up in a tux and just started saying things like, please take me with you, I'm ready to go. And then called her by her name, Marcia. And I assume it was his mother came up and said, I'm sorry, my son is bothering you, or something along those lines. And she said, he called me Marcia. How does he know my name? And she said, no, he called you ma'am. You must have heard him wrong. And that's when he proceeded to say, please take me with you, I'm ready to go. And reached for her, and she said, what did he just say? And then the woman left abruptly. After that, I don't know what happened. Let's see. What happened after that? It was like...
A couple of times, she's seen a creepy-looking man.
There's a very tall, creepy man. He's just standing afar, staring at her. Surprisingly, she wasn't that creeped out, I feel like. She just kind of... noticed him. I don't know. I would expect a stronger reaction from that because she saw him multiple times just staring at her. And so she goes and she gets the woman comes back with her corn husk doll. Is that when she started saying?
She starts asking her questions.
She starts asking her things like, where are you from? What are your parents' names? And Marcia has a very confused look on her face. And it was very confusing, actually. I feel like that was not very well done, because it was kind of... I don't know. It was just uncomfortable. But this woman is continuously asking her, you know, where are you from? What are your parents' names? What do you do for a living? Do you have any siblings? And Marcia just goes, I don't remember. The woman keeps going and asking her these questions, and Marcia's getting progressively more confused and upset and scared because she can't remember anything, any of the questions that the woman is asking her. And so she keeps saying over and over again, why are you doing this to me? Which I thought was kind of strange. She starts getting really, really freaked out and starts kind of backing up, and the woman starts coming towards her, just continuously asking her more questions and repeatedly saying Marcia until it doesn't become a word anymore, which happens for the rest of the episode. And she runs out, and then she just goes on this strange run, fast walk through the what seemed like the entire mall, and you just hear voices saying Marcia over and over and over and over again until, like I said, it's not a word anymore. Oh, and then the man is following her as well. So the toy store lady and then the strange man are following her, and that's when you notice that that's when I notice that the man has deformed mannequin hands. And so I think that's when she notices that the mannequins are creepy, I guess. They weren't really doing anything, but right? Am I right?
What? But I think we get the impression they're saying Marcia.
Yeah, yeah. They weren't like being real. Like they weren't moving or anything yet. And so she goes and runs for a very long time through a lot of different stores, and then at one point there's mannequins with like chicken wire around their heads and flashing lights. And then their mouths move in a robotic fashion. And then she tries to go out the fire exit, right? Is that right? The emergency door, and she can't get through. And that's when is it before that? Sorry, I'm struggling. Well, at one point, she notices that her leg is becoming plastic. And so she starts limping, and then she falls, and then she notices her arm is becoming plastic, and you can hear her plastic body hitting against the floor. She doesn't know what's happening to her. Mind you, the toy store lady is still holding the Cornhusk doll the entire time. I don't know why. And Marcia just continues to try and get away, and then she tries to go out the emergency door. She can't get out. She's still turning to plastic. And the woman and the man are saying things like, just come back. We miss you. We want you to come back. It's not your time anymore. It's someone else's turn. And so you just see Marcia terrified, continuously turning into a mannequin, and them just trying to persuade her to relax and remember whatever they want her to remember, which in turn is that she is a mannequin. And then it cuts. Am I missing anything? It just cuts, right?
To the next morning?
Yeah, to the next morning. And they go, the camera pans through the store, and you can hear the voice, the narrator saying, I don't even remember what he said. But you can hear that, just the basic end of the Twilight Zone episode. And it pans to the mannequins, and it's Marcia being sprayed by a hose by another mannequin in a store. Was a horrible explanation, but that's as best I can do. Sorry. It was all real in my head.
Okay, well, you didn't talk about your hallucination of a moment where she goes past a big container filled with mannequin heads.
Oh my gosh. I was hoping that was real. Yeah, a giant container filled with mannequin heads, and only two of them were moving. The rest of them were just... Was that real?
Yes, it was real, and two of them were saying, Marcia... Okay, so you revealed early on that you did not like this episode.
No, I did not.
Was there anything about it that you did like?
I love 80s. I love anything 80s and the 80s setting and outfits, and yeah, I love that, but that's it.
So this one was written by Rockne S. O'Bannon, but... You know, it's based on the original that was written by Serling, and I feel like maybe they looked at that old one and said, okay, let's try and look at this logically. Let's try and figure out the rules of, and so we get a bunch of interaction with
Marcia and the sales clerk, where they established that she's only been in town for a month.
Oh, yeah.
And she didn't have a job or any money, but there was a landlord that let her stay for free and got her a job. But she doesn't have any memories from where she came from or for everything that she knows is from the last month. And I feel like all of that was, because we saw the first one, we knew she was a mannequin from the very, very, very beginning. And I feel like this one expects you to know that she's a mannequin early on.
Did. Yeah, I felt like that too.
The first clue is the little boy recognizing her as Marcia and saying, "I want take me with you," or whatever, which to me was the best part of the whole episode. Just that little part with the boy
was weird.
I liked that a lot. But maybe viewers in the 80s didn't know that she was a mannequin, in which case, I guess you're just thinking this is weird, or all these people are super weird. The creepy man, boy, they went out of their way to make him seem like Michael Myers from the Halloween films. He was dressed the same way. He had this dead look on his face, and he'd go, "Marcia, Marcia," or whatever. And again, it is supposed to be a scary episode.
Yeah, that was a little much, I think.
It also was super short. It was 22 minutes, I think.
It went so...
And how much of the 22 minutes would you say was taken up with her running?
Oh my gosh, most of it.
Yeah, it's like they had 3 days to shoot it and they got all the dialogue done on the first day. And they said, what do we do with these next 2 days? And I was like, just run, Terry. The director really likes to watch Terry Farrell run.
Oh my.
And I can't blame him for that, but it's just... They could have told this in like 7 minutes.
Oh, yeah, easily.
The script was probably 6 or 7 pages long. And I didn't like it much either. I didn't think it was terrible.
No,
almost everything in the first one worked better. The pacing was better.
Oh, yeah.
And maybe some of the dialogue in the original is dated and more stilted. And if you remember, the first one ends with her saying, "I remember now. I'm a mannequin."
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't do that in this where, they just come right out. But they do, once she's like on the ground becoming a mannequin again, one of them says, "We all get 1 month to go out in among the real world. And it's not your turn anymore. It's someone else's turn," and all that. But they had done it in a much more horrible way with her like turning back into a mannequin.
Like distressed.
It's awful, that thought of her, because she's terrified.
She doesn't know what's happening,
Whereas in the original, I think she accepted her fate.
Yeah.
And all of them like said, "Welcome back, Marcia." And they put their arms around her. And then we see her as a mannequin again. It was just...
Exactly, yeah.
But whereas this is like a nightmare, one of us kind of thing. And that's clearly a choice that they made of let's... make this as creepy as we can. And mannequins are inherently scary because they're representations of people that are not alive. And there were a couple of moments that I thought were pretty good. There's a moment where she runs past these two mannequins. One of them, I think the guy, has an umbrella. And then she runs past them again. And now they are people dressed the same way and they grab her. But... there's too much of that. There's so much of the running and them voices saying, "Marcia."
It didn't stop.
If you couldn't take a drink every time somebody said Marcia, but if you took a drink every fifth Marcia, you would be passed out before 22 minutes is over. You would probably have alcohol poisoning, actually. If I had to guess, I'd say 120 times they said Marcia.
Oh, yeah, easily. It was so unnecessary.
And the version that we saw, this bootleg version, had the subtitles. And so you saw Marcia, 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 Marcia. You know, it's like a fever dream from Jan Brady.
That's what I was going to say.
On the screen at all times. See, I don't, you don't know Terry Farrell, right?
No.
She was a model back then, and then she became an actress. And I knew her from Deep Space Nine, from Star Trek.
Oh.
She was on that for 6 years. And she was my favorite thing about Deep Space Nine. But... I don't know that she's done anything after that. She left that show to do a show called Becker, I believe, with Ted Danson. And then I've never seen her since. I don't know if she's... When you're a Star Trek actor, you can just retire and go to Star Trek conventions for the rest of your life and make money that way. Maybe you don't have to act anymore, but... And then the clerk at the toy store, you had asked me, where do I know her from? And I think that that's what it was, is she looked like Cassandra Peterson that
I
was
think so, yeah.
Elvira. Her name was Anne Wedgeworth. She was on Evening Shade. She played John Goodman's mom on Roseanne.
Oh.
She was on Three's Company, which was before your time, mm-hmm. before my time, practically. She was in Steel Magnolias, if you've seen that.
Okay.
She was a regular on Evening Shade, which only went till 94, and you weren't even around
no.
in 94. So I don't know where you would have known her from.
I don't either. Huh. Yeah, she looked really familiar. I liked her, actually, a lot. I thought she was creepy.
Well, a couple of things that we didn't like about the old one. Do you remember the store manager? Do you have any
flamboyant
memory of that?
One?
Yeah, I mean, he was just so... crazy over the top, and they didn't have anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like they asked Anne Wedgeworth to be as creepy as possible.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, you know, Michael Myers stalking her around
the
mall. It was just an interesting take, because I think you could do a super sad retelling of this.
For sure.
Because in this, they established she just came to the mall. She felt like she had to come that day, even though she didn't need the doll until Saturday. And the clerk asks her, well, why did you feel you had to come tonight? And she doesn't know. But I think you could take it of, you know, I lived among the real world for 30 days. And now for some reason I have to go back to the mall. But I don't know why. I don't want to be here. This is sad.
Yeah.
And people are just like, what's wrong, Marcia? Don't you like it here? And she's like, no, I don't. I shouldn't be here. I don't want to be here, kind of thing. You could do that and then have it be very sad when she realizes, oh, I wasn't a real person.
Mm-hmm.
I'm one of you. You know, and they do have a line like that in the old one. Remember, she's like, was it? How was it? And she's like, it was so wonderful. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
But this one, they didn't choose that. It's a body snatcher kind of thing of, you know, join us kind of thing.
Yeah.
And they, you know, they're grabbing at her and they her body transforms against her will back into plastic. And
I wondered if they could do, I thought about, I don't know about like the contact with actual humans, but like what if she formed a relationship with someone? You know what I mean? Like an actual human she formed a relationship with?
Like she's got a boyfriend
or
and asks him to take her to the mall. And
he's
walking around with her.
And
he says, that guy called you Marcia.
Yeah.
And she's like, oh, I don't. You must be mistaken. You know, that kind
of
thing.
That would be interesting.
And then he loses her at some point when she freaks out.
And
he's looking for her. He can't find her. And then at the end
and
of the episode, he
says,
Marcia, thank God. I've been walking around for 45.
Yeah.
And it's a
That would be
a mannequin.
So cool.
Well, yeah, that's the thing with these is you can do any number of twists or interpretations of it. But yeah, clearly this one was, gosh, do you remember that mannequin episode? That was so scary. Let's see how scary we can do that. And like the mannequin heads talking was just like that was intended to give people nightmares.
It was just uncomfortable.
And then there were these two creepy like robotic.
They weren't even like.
They weren't realistic human mannequins, and one of them had like phony teeth, like chattery teeth that were saying "Marcia." Again, it was intended to scare people, to freak people out, to people that are on drugs like you. To be like, no, turn it off. I don't want to watch it anymore. I'm trying to remember that's a side quest. But I did have a drug experience where something was on the TV. And I was like, could we not have that on the TV, please, anymore? Please, right now, just turn that off, please. Anyway.
Prescription or recreational?
Yes, I guess I should have said you are on prescription. Heavy-duty painkillers and... that's why you said, we need to watch it right now because I've taken this. And by the time it kicks in, I won't know where I am anymore. I thought that Terry Farrell was good.
Mm-hmm. She was your basic 80s lost girl, I feel like. You know what I mean? The hysterical, confused, pretty girl.
That's something that we talked about in the first one is Anne Francis has to go into hysterics.
Mm-hmm.
And there's the scene where she like backs up and falls into the elevator.
Yes.
And there was a scene similar to that in this and where she's, there was a moment where she's like throwing things and it didn't work at all.
No.
It was like they had said, hey, Terry, we only have two of these. And if you break them, we won't be able to do a second take. And so she's like, okay. And she like throws, and I was just like, oh, shoot, you really should have done a second take where you're like, Terry, we got a good one. Now break them.
Now do it.
But still, that kind of stuff has to be really, really hard with maintaining a level of fear and menace and and hysterics. And I remember the story of when James Cameron was doing Titanic, which took months to do down in Mexico. He would have all the extras. He'd say, okay, on a scale from 1 to 10 of how terrified you are, you're all at a 7 right now. And then he's like, you know, okay, you guys remember 6 hours ago? You're still at a 7. Okay, do you guys remember yesterday? You're at a 7. And all these exhausted people would have to try and maintain their level of fear and panic at whatever level they were supposed to be in the movie. And yeah, that sort of thing is really hard. I shot a movie in a mall. It could have been the same mall in L.A. And there was nothing there. They had shown us, the special effects people brought in a model of what the monster was going to look like. It was a movie called Evolution that was done by Ivan Reitman. It was him trying to do a sci-fi version of the Ghostbusters. And nobody went inside. It wasn't very good. But they showed us this model, and it's like, okay, and it's going to be like, you know, 20 feet tall or whatever. And it's coming, it's rampaging through the mall. And there was nothing there when they said action, and we had to panic and all be like looking at the same spot in the air where it was supposed to be and then run. And it's like, okay, all right, back to one. Let's all do it again. And that was hard.
That sounds hard.
If they hadn't shown us the model, I think it would have been super, super difficult because at least in my mind, I could say, okay, I saw what that thing is. Imagine if that were 20 feet tall. But there were like stunt men who were being paid to fall in the mall while we're running and, you know, trip and fall. And we're all running from this thing. And your adrenaline would kick in when you're seeing all these people. And you know, they said it was fine to scream and all that. And so when there are people running and screaming around you, you can't help but go. And that worked. But then they'd say, cut, okay, everybody and back, and you'd have to do it again and again and again. And that is really hard.
Yeah.
Because after like 5 or 6 times, your body realizes this is pretend. Yeah. And it's like, you know, I don't really have to release all this adrenaline. I'm not in danger or whatever. And so the performance gets weaker as it goes on and on. When you're no longer scared. And yeah, sometimes I think about that with horror movies where, you know, where Jamie Lee Curtis has to be terrified. Yeah. Like Halloween 2, the whole movie is Jamie Lee Curtis injured and going, and I can't even imagine. I know that she did not enjoy making that movie. She was contractually obligated. Even Carpenter didn't want to make that movie.
Really?
He felt like we had done the movie, the Halloween movie, and it was really successful. Now let's go do something else. And they're just like, yes, but it made $100 million. And so, yeah, Jamie Lee is so good in the 1978 Halloween. Like her fear, her terror, like where she's just like on the brink of crying and banging on doors and people won't let her in. You've seen the original, right?
Yeah.
Is so, so good. And then in the second one, it's just, it's hard to watch because she's...
You can tell that she's
It's just... Well, yeah, she's exhausted, but it's just like now it's that scene, but in a whole movie of scene. And it just... Yeah, I don't know. But the new Halloween, which unfortunately they called Halloween, was really, really fun. It was really solid. That. Where now she's, you know... How old would... Laurie Strode, let's say that she was 18 in 1978 and it's 40 years later. Would make her.
I'm on drugs. I can't.
You're on drugs. Sorry. Well, I'm not good with math. But in that one, it was really fun because people have thought she was crazy for all these years, and she's been the only one that's saying, you know, he's going to come back. He's going to come back, and you have to be ready. You always have to be ready for when he comes back. And they're just like, you know, nobody can be in a relationship with her. Her daughter hates her. You know, her granddaughter barely knows her as like her crazy grandma or whatever.
Oh, is her daughter 13 going on 30?
Greer, Rosie Greer, Pam Greer, Judy Greer.
Judy Greer, okay. That's what I thought. All right, continue.
And then Michael Myers does snap out of it. And in that one, I guess they're saying that he has been institutionalized for all these years, for 40 years. And then one day he does snap and come out, and go on a killing spree, and Lori's like the only person that's just like, I've been waiting for this day. I've been right all this time and you've been wrong. Now is my day.
Yeah.
And that moment, you have to wait over an hour of the movie before that moment kicks in. But when that kicks in, it becomes a totally different movie where she comes alive and she's like, I've been preparing for you, Michael, all this time. Welcome home. And it's really, really cool because she just like kicks the crap out of him. And she has all these booby traps that she has set up like 20 years ago. They've just been waiting to go off for when this guy comes back. And that, yeah, it was really fun. Well, the last half hour, I guess, was really fun. I'm sorry. How did we get on? So Terry Farrell is running terrified through the thing. And just, I feel like it was a mistake to say, let's do it like a horror movie, like Halloween or something like that.
That was what was, I guess, what they wanted in the 80s, right? That was the thing, to have a terrified girl running from danger.
Yeah, but it doesn't really work.
No.
Maybe if you didn't know that she was a mannequin, it would. But it's just... Yeah,
it's obvious, though. I feel like even if you hadn't seen the original, it's like...
Yeah, you talked about the very, very end of the episode. So the narrator comes up and...
I couldn't remember what he said.
Let me tell you what he says. Imagine standing forever still, unable to act, to speak, to touch a reassuring hand. If you were released from such a fate, even for a while, wouldn't you hope to forget that in reality, you're only on a short leave of absence from the Twilight Zone? And while he's saying this, they're showing all the characters that we have seen, like the little boy in the tux and his mom. They are mannequins. The store owner or operator is holding a Cabbage Patch doll and she's a mannequin. There's a janitor mannequin. There's and then we see her as a mannequin. Actually, that one looks really good. It looks like her.
Yeah.
But the ones in the 1960s looked really, really good too.
I think they look better.
But like I said, that's what speaks to me is imagine if that was your fate, but you got to be released for a month. How would that be? I don't know if you could make a movie of that where you establish from the very beginning that she's a mannequin.
I feel like you'd have to, I don't know if you could do that if you establish it from the very beginning, because I feel like people would get bored almost. You know what I mean?
But at the same time, you've got a ticking clock if you let people know that it's only up for a month. And that eventually she's going to have to go back.
Yeah.
I guess it's kind of like one of those dying young kind of movies where somebody has a disease and you know that they're going to die from the very, very beginning and the clock is ticking, and see if they can make the best of their life. But I don't know. There were a couple of movies called Mannequin in the 80s with Kim Cattrall, but they weren't like this. It was like a Egyptian curse that had been placed on somebody so she was forced to become a mannequin, and then the curse is lifted, and when she's with, I think it was Jonathan and Silverman, I don't know, it was one of those guys though that only had a career in the 80s. Anyway, when she's with him, she comes to life and gets to experience like New York in 1987, but when anybody else comes back into the room, she reverts to mannequinism. I don't know. There's never been a remake of that, as far as I know.
I hope there's not.
It was a really successful movie.
Really?
Yeah.
I feel like I would hate it if it didn't have... I don't know. I love the creepy element. I don't think I could do it without the...
Yeah, that one was a comedy. And it's funny, the things that were such a big deal when I was a kid that are completely forgotten now. And then there are things that people still talk about. Like one of the things people talk about constantly, except for you, is the Goonies. And I was like, well, I guess the Goonies was a big deal, but it's a bigger deal now than it was then. Yeah. Whereas, like, Mannequin was a bigger hit than the Goonies, I'm sure. Maybe not. I mean, Goonies had Spielberg working on it. But anyway, I feel like we're sidetracked, and you probably need to go lie down. But, yeah, this is the first one from the 80s Twilight Zone that we've reviewed. And it was rarely very good.
Yeah.
Well, maybe that's not. It was hit or miss. The one in the 2000s was rarely very good. But, if you're interested in those, they remade a whole bunch of the old ones. We could continue to do that. Or we could just look up a couple of the ones that people love from that show and watch that. Or we can just watch the 60s one.
I feel like I would hate the 2000s one.
Well, I did.
The early one, right? That's what we're talking about?
Right. I don't know what we're in now. We could call it the 2019 one.
Yeah.
I hated that show. And I explained in the very first episode what I felt was wrong with it was that they felt like the target audience was urban teens.
It needed to be relatable.
And so it was really, really dumb. And it would have a guest star that would appeal to that demographic. But it... I don't know. There was an episode where Jason Alexander was the Grim Reaper and he decided he didn't want to be death anymore. He didn't want to take people's lives anymore or whatever. And I feel like that might have been the second episode. And I was just like, oh, that's pretty cool. But it was mostly because it's Jason Alexander and he's super charming and likable. But I don't ever remember after that first night enjoying an episode. And there would be times when I'd want to kick the set in. There was an episode where there was a bus. And it kept stopping, and there were these people at the bus stop, and they were afraid to get on the bus. And, like, the bus driver would stop and say, all aboard! And the bus driver was super creepy. And he's like, come on, come on board! What was wrong? What, don't you want to be on the bus? Everybody's going on the bus! And they'd be like, no, no, we'll take the next one. And he's like, okay, but it's passing you by. We'll go, your last chance! And then he'd drive away, and then the same bus driver would pull up again and be like, hey, all aboard. And these people are like, I don't want to get on the bus. I don't either. This is bad. I'm afraid to get on the bus. Are you afraid to get on the bus? Yes, I'm afraid to get on the bus. Let's not get on the bus. And he's like, okay, last chance to get on the bus. You sure? Okay, bye-bye. And then Forrest Whitaker steps out at the end of the... There's like a coda... where they're just like, how long have we been waiting here at the bus stop? All our lives. Oh, that's too bad. Maybe we should have gotten on the bus.
Oh, my gosh.
And then Forrest Whitaker steps out and he says, you see, kids, the bus was life and the opportunities that come along to us. But they don't come along forever. And if you miss it, you've missed out on life.
Oh, that sucks.
And I was just like, but why was it so creepy then? You made us think that the bus was death. You made us think that you lied to us. And yeah, it's one of those where I was just like, oh, shoot, I kicked in the set again. Dang it. You know how many hours at the burger joint I'm going to have to work to buy a new TV so I can kick it in again when the next new Twilight Zone airs? Well, that's it. I'm sorry. It's been a super long time since we've done an episode of this. But we've come to the end of another episode of The Twilight Groan. Anything else you want to say?
I don't think I can speak.
That's because you're turning back into what you once were. I have been Rish Outfield.
And I have been Cathexis on drugs.
Stay away from drugs, kids. They eventually will turn you into a mannequin. An attractive mannequin. So you have to decide what you would rather be. Good night.
Submitted for your approval. The Twilight Groan is produced under a Creative Commons 3.0 attribution, non-derivatives, non-commercial, black and white, topsy-turvy, non-allergenic, caffeine-free license. So download it and share it, listen to it, but don't charge for it and don't pass it off as your own. Goodbye.
Next time on The Twilight Groan, we'll be discussing The Monsters, A Do on Maple Street.
But there are certain things... Kill for me. I can never figure out how to hang up on these things.